Hey, kids, we're a couple of annoyed Grunt Boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast.
Oh, here she comes. Watch out, boy, she'll chew you up. Oh, here she comes. She's a man-eater.
That's right, we're the podcast that explores the American animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond. Why 11 and beyond, you ask? Well, an entity known as the Wheel of Random has trapped us and forced us to watch the later seasons and the newest ones when they're available. I say we because I am one annoyed grunt boy named Steve, and with me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy,
Craig.
Hello, Craig. What's up?
I'm sore. I just got back from a little mini weekend vacation at the coast.
A staycation.
Yeah. Well, not really. I mean, it's still like an hour and a half to 2 hour drive.
That's fair.
But, you know, I went and climbed a mountain, or hiked a mountain, not climbed a mountain. Don't want people to think I'm like a big mountain climber type of guy. So I just hiked up a mountain and Jesus, I'm fucking sore. And
yeah.
I'm out of shape, like the most I've ever been probably.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know. Got to get some physical fitness into the routine. So
yeah.
What better way than 6 mile hike? Like 3 miles to the top, 3 miles down.
So it's been a fairly hot day on our neck of the woods, but I assume the coast is a little bit cooler.
Yeah. The coast is definitely cooler. I wasn't feeling high 80s. It was like in the 70s. But, you know, when you're on top of the mountain, it's cold.
Yeah.
I saw like so many bears.
Oh.
Yeah. It's just a great place for a heftier gentleman to hang out in.
Sure.
They like other gentlemen.
Yeah. They love to hike.
This is how out of shape I am. Like, there's like this spot on the trail, and I'm like, I need to take a break, need a little breather. And then I didn't realize like there was like a son and his father kind of behind us. And the dad was a lot older than me, I think. And the son, of course, passed us. But like, oh yeah, they got energy. Like, how does that guy have energy?
And you're like, whoa.
Yeah. I don't have a kid.
Yeah.
This guy's raised like a 15 year old, still in good shape. And here I am, kidless.
And then, it looks like you have a baby.
Yeah. And then like, we're not even close to the top and they come walking down like, yeah, we already went to the top. Like, Jeez. Although we came with a great ghost story because we're like walking up the trail, kind of like the beginning of it. And there's like this turquoise bandana. I'm like, oh, it's a sweet turquoise bandana. I almost wanted to pick it up because like, you know, it's a turquoise bandana. You don't see turquoise.
It's true.
All the Crips have taken them.
The fancy Crips.
The turquoise Crips.
Yeah.
Look, to all of our blood listeners, like, we don't choose sides.
No.
We like the Crips and the Bloods equally.
And if you're a magenta blood or a turquoise Crip, we welcome you. And we hope that you can find unity in some sort of lilac situation.
Look, this is Pride Month. We take pride in all of our gangs.
That's right.
Yeah.
We believe in gang pride.
But yeah, so you see this, like, nifty handkerchief, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna pick it up, but I didn't, of course. Because, you know, what if someone just, like, had to take a shit? Like, I need to wipe my ass now. Yeah, we don't touch it. But then, like, you know, we get a little bit way halfway from that handkerchief, and we just see this lady. She's like, has any of you seen a turquoise handkerchief? She had this, like, fervor in her voice of, like, she desperately needs that handkerchief. I was like, yeah, it's back on the trail, kind of the beginning. You'll find it. So, yeah, we tell her. Then I thought, like, what if she was, like, a lost hiker?
Oh.
And once a year, the day of her disappearance, the ghost of the hiker comes and asks for the turquoise handkerchief. So, like, if you did pick it up and you're like, yeah, here it is. And you hand it to her. And all of a sudden, it disappears. And so does she.
You go check the archives and, like, she went missing, like, 60 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah. I like it.
All right. So that's our new campfire story. But yeah, these legs are tired. Steve, how are your legs?
Mine are fine because I sat in an air-conditioned theater for 2 hours and 20 minutes watching a movie.
Did you go see Book Club 2, The Bookening?
Yep. It was a real page-turner.
You love your Lily Tomlins.
And yep.
Jane Fondos. You just go there to pick up some ladies, right?
Yeah.
No, what did you really see?
I saw Spider-Man Into... Nope, not Into...
Outro.
Among
the spiders.
Because the next one's going to be Beyond. Last one was Into Across.
There you go.
Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, we've known this movie's coming out for a while. I can't remember the title. And you just saw it.
It's because like the subtitle is so close to... Because the first one was Into the Spider-Verse, which makes sense because it's kind of welcoming it. And now we're across it because we're going through it. And then the third one will be called Beyond because it'll presumably go beyond.
Well, spoiler, Steve. What's beyond the Spider-Verse? The Wolverine-verse?
Maybe.
The U.S. Agent-verse?
The U.S. Acresverse.
That's the dream, right?
Yep.
Well, give a spoiler heavy review right now.
Well,
or not. I haven't seen it yet. Steve has seen a movie before I have seen a movie.
I know. I thought it was weird. I felt a little guilty seeing a movie.
We don't need to go see movies together, Steve.
I'm a big Spider-Man guy, and I really loved the first one. So I wanted to see it as soon as I could, and this was the first possible date that I could see it. So I saw it. I won't spoil anything. I absolutely adored it. I'm a sucker for these Spider-Man animated films, and this one did not disappoint. It somehow feels bigger than the first one, which was a hard thing to do, and that's all I'll say. But man, wow.
Man, comma, spider.
That's right.
Look, I'll see it later this week.
All right.
June's a big month for movies for me. I got this one. I got The Flash.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to see that Wes Anderson Asteroid City. It looks like the most Wes Anderson thing of Wes Anderson. It looks like a parody. Looks like a parody of a Wes Anderson movie.
Indeed.
I got to see Indiana Jones and all the movies. You know, they should just put all these movies onto like a little platform where you can just like stream it into our houses. But why isn't that invented yet?
It'd be brilliant. Take it to the max.
I got my eye on that Peacock. What?
Then it'll be Showtime with all the stars.
Does Showtime still have a streaming app?
I don't even know if Showtime's still a channel, honestly.
I think Showtime is through Paramount Plus.
You're probably right, yeah.
But it's also, you can get it like through Hulu. Is Showtime the like the Parasite streamer? Like, we don't really have our own. We just want to like lash out.
I'm pretty sure you can
stream
Parasite on Paramount Plus.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think it's like, it doesn't have a home, so it'll just take whoever will take them.
Yeah.
But you can do it also with Amazon, too.
We're like the Showtime of podcasts.
Yeah. Sometimes we show boobs.
Most of the times, it's just the same four movies over and over again. As in our case, the same four jokes.
Right.
Like going to our favorite segment.
The Simpsons Beer Corner?
Sure.
Alrighty, Craig, what have you got for us this week?
This was a beer that I picked up when we went out to the Bill Oakley Level Brewing opening or extravaganza, right?
Right.
And thanks for the like on our social media, Bill.
Yeah.
And the comment. Thanks
for also for now vowing to be a lifelong listener.
I missed that part. Yeah. But, you know, because right next door of all those food pods was Frank's. Is it Frank's?
John's.
John's market, which is just a beer market. So, you know, we were going through that stuff and looking at other beers that we, you know, were looking for. And I found this one called to me because it just looks like a pack of Marlboro cigarettes from Boss Rambler. Stokes Light is a smooth, crisp flavor. And it really makes you want to have a cigarette, though, because you're like, oh, wow, this literally looks like a pack of Marbs, which I never smoked Marb because they were kind of gross.
Yeah.
But we got here from Boss Ramble. Check them out, bossramble.com. This was also like a staff pick at the Jake's.
Mm-hmm. John's.
At John's Market. And it's also disrespectful. Like I'm bad at remembering names. Like I remember like a business that was called like Fluffy Fart Flippers.
Fluffy Fur Flippers is easy to remember, but something like John's.
Yeah. Or Jake's. So at Jake's Market that I got this at, John's, here we go. We got, it's just meant to be like a light Pilsner type of a little beer. Look, there's even a little button where it says shotgun here. So they want you to like do the shotgun thing with the beer. Like I don't do that kind of thing because I want to, smell my beer and taste it. It's only a 4.2% alcohol. So it's, you know, pretty low. Brewed and canned in Boss Rambler Brewery in Bend, Oregon. So yeah. Wow, it even has the serving facts on it. Not a lot of the beers keep serving facts on. Look, it's 135 calories, 12 carbs, 1 gram of protein, and zero fat. It's fat-free, guys.
Hey.
Oh, you definitely get that summery, not stinky, but the typical light beer, refreshing smell. All right, that's a lot better than I thought it was going to be. This is nice and smooth, crisp flavor, like it says.
Sounds like a solid, like, just sitting at the pool, knocking them back kind of beer.
I think they were right. This is the beer of the summer. Like, if you saw this at a bar and it was $4 and then there's that $3 PBR, I would grab that $4 Stokes because it actually has a flavor.
Yeah.
It's not skanky like a PBR or like a Rolling Rock. Like, it doesn't have that tinny flavor.
Right. I think skunky is the term.
What did I say?
Skanky.
I meant skunky. Jesus Christ.
But PBR does like to, you know, wear fishnets and sleep around.
Yeah. It doesn't have like a bad aftertaste. Mm. It's surprisingly refreshing. And on a hot day like this, I could do a whole six pack of this stuff. This is good. I recommend try to find the Stokes Light, Steve, if you got it in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, I do believe we've had it in our store, so I'll give it a try.
It'll be your favorite beer to just eat some hot dogs and some skanky skunks.
And some skunky skanks.
And what do you got for us, Steve?
Well, Craig, you know, this episode does feature a simulacrum of Morrissey. And in the later years, Morrissey's gotten a little problematic. In fact, you could say that he uses a lot of racial epithets or slurs, if you will. So that's why from Shades Brewing out of Salt Lake City, I have Slurry, strawberry lemon triple fruited sour ale. It's an ale brewed with strawberry and lemons. And this was kind enough to be given to me by your lovely partner, Heather. The packaging isn't too kid-friendly, just kind of looks like a Slurpee a little bit from the 7-Eleven Corporation. The color is very interesting, kind of a peachy beige, like ecru color. Smells very fruit-forward, very citrusy. Ooh, wow, that is tart, but it is a goddamn delight.
Really?
Oh, man, yeah. It's like strawberry lemonade. I think it feels like a kind of like a Berliner Weiss type ale, but it's just really, really lemony, really bright. Super tart, super like makes your mouth pucker.
Okay.
But it's also weirdly refreshing.
Huh. That was the complete opposite of what I really said.
As I'm drinking it, I still enjoy it. However, if somebody were to say that it resembles bathroom cleaner or like lemon pledge or like spick and span,
yeah,
I could understand that, which is funny because I genuinely do like it and I love the lemoniness of it. However, I could see the kind of flavor profile that kind of resembles something that you would scrub a floor with.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because you like it. She did not like it, but she also loves like a pickle sour. So,
right. And that sounds awful.
Yeah. You would not like a pickle sour. And I just don't like sours in general. So yeah. Here we are. Well, that was not the reaction I wanted. I wanted you to barf all over your computer.
I'm sorry. I have a strange taste, and that was, it's really good.
All right. At least I like my beer.
Yeah.
You like yours. That's all that matters.
That's right. And we're all allowed to like what we like. And some of us like movies. And so, Craig, what was the number one movie all the way back on April 18th, 2021?
It was, 2021? Wasn't that the pandemic?
It was.
How were we watching movies in theaters?
They were just kind of shown, but
yeah, I remember now. It was King Kong versus Godzilla, or the other way around. It's part of that new MonsterVerse. Look, I guess Skull Island's part of that same verse, right?
Yeah,
I saw that one. That was good. I think I saw the first Godzilla and it was boring. I never saw the other ones, so
yeah, I only saw Skull Island and I thought that was fun, but yeah,
all right, good on you, Godzilla versus King Dong Kong, or is it Dong?
I think it's just Kong.
Okay. Well, Steve, we were probably still just sheltered in 2021. We weren't going to the theaters.
No.
So we were probably just hanging out, listening on Spotify. What was the number one song on Spotify or the Billboard Hot 100 for that week?
Well, the number one song on the Billboard Hot 100 was Leave the Door Open by Silk Shock, which is made up of Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak. I am playing no games. Everyone that I say is coming straight from the heart. So
we reviewed the song before.
We may have, yeah.
Because I just remember it kind of feels very like Delphonics, like 70s kind of.
Yeah.
That kind of vibe. Yeah. All right. Bruno Mars. Everyone likes a Bruno Mars.
I've always felt that Bruno Mars by himself is a little goofy. I have a hard time taking him seriously. But with Anderson .Paak making the group Silk Shock, I think it kind of gives it, I like the sound
Sonic.
More. Oh, yeah.
There should be Bruno, Kirby, and Anderson Cooper and Sonic the Hedgehog. They should all start a band.
I like it. Yeah.
Although isn't Bruno Kirby dead? I think he's passed.
Rest in peace.
Is there no more famous Brunos besides Bruno Mars?
Well,
besides that's nice Bruno guy, right?
Yeah.
My wife or no?
I was going to say Bruce Willis, but
oh yeah, yeah.
But we don't talk about Bruno no more.
Yeah. I think we said this was the song of the summer back in 2021.
Probably. Sure. What a shitty summer that was.
I don't know. It was kind of nice because, you didn't have to
do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
All righty, Craig. Well, that was what we were listening to, but will we like what we were watching and what we're watching today? The 19th episode of the 32nd season, Panic on the Streets of Springfield, in which Lisa gets an imaginary friend, a depressed British singer from the 80s, guest voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch, who makes her feel much better about her friends. Meanwhile, Homer gets a vehicle with awesome torque and becomes a truck guy.
Woo! Let's finish our drink, Steve.
Sounds good. We'll watch the episode and we'll be right back.
Every day I try to smile, but can't help but frown. Every day I draw my bath and pray I will drown. I step out my door and I take a deep breath, turn back inside and pray for my death. Cause everyone is horrid except me and possibly you.
Possibly me.
Oh, everyone is horrid and my dear, I fear you are too. Oh.
And we're back. Today we're talking about Panic on the Streets of Springfield, the 19th episode of the 32nd season. It originally aired on April 18th, 2021. It is episode 703 in the show's run. Your nerd code is QAB F12. It was written by Tim Long, directed by Matthew Nastuck, and your showrunners are Al Jean and Matt Selman.
All right, Tim Long. God, I feel like we just reviewed an episode he wrote. I don't know, maybe two episodes ago or season finale?
That's
season
right.
34. Tim Long here. Man, we already went through all of his stuff a few weeks ago. Do we have to go through it again?
I don't think so. I'll just say that he's been writing since for The Simpsons since 1999. Of course, his first episode is The Simpsons Bible Stories. Also, no, he did the Gaga episode. And I reviewed about 15 episodes of his.
Speaking of the Gaga episode, here's some more information. Lady Gaga is upset that we keep ignoring her emails and texts and phone calls because she really wants to be on the show. It's just we haven't had time. I mean, last week we were too busy at the John's Market for the Level beer and the steamed hams. Just, you know, she wanted to do it that day. But like, look, we're pretty faithful to Bill Oakley and his venture. So we had to side with his event.
And now we got to get him off her back. Always trying to talk to us.
Yeah. Although I'm pretty sure, remember correctly, I think there was a time when he saw us and pointed at us, but he was talking to like a security guard and they like a security guard just like stood by us to make sure we didn't approach him. It was probably for the best.
Yeah, I assume it was because he wanted to give us the VIP treatment.
We stood up, security guard just like stepped right into our face, like kind of like blocked us from anything. So maybe he was just being helpful. Maybe Bill knew who we were and wanted our protection, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
I don't know why we're writing 2 weeks on this Bill Oakley story, but, you know.
Yeah, it's a big event.
Very big event that we ate a burger and drink a beer. But all right, Steve, let's just get into this week's episode. And it begins, as it always does, at the Springfield Medical Center, where doctors carry less than 5 pills of Oxy. Inside, Dr. Julius Hibbert is concerned with the results of Homer's physical. He's 80 pounds overweight. To be fair, and I'm on Homer's side, he was wearing his socks while he was getting weighed.
Yeah.
And we all know socks could put in an extra 80 pounds.
For sure.
Also, Homer's cholesterol is sky high. Homer always says, you know, go big or go home. And the last thing the good doctor, not that one, notes is that Homer's testosterone is just a little low.
Oh, no.
Homer is freaked out by this since that fuels his punching and yelling, not to mention his undeserved confidence. I really thought that line was great. Just, my testosterone. Can I test your testosterone now?
Oh, sure.
Just take this needle and... I don't know how they test testosterone. I'm assuming it's like blood. Yeah.
So you assume that doctors drink blood?
Yeah. Dr. Acula? Makes sense.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
I don't have a sound effects machine that takes blood out of like... I just assume that's the needle sucking the blood out.
Ka-ching!
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Schnick. Oh, that's Wolverine.
Right.
Steve, how's your testosterone these days?
I mean, I don't know the last time I had to test it, but I'm going to assume fairly low.
I think I got the low T. I just feel it, you know?
Yeah.
I just don't have like the drive to punch people in the face anymore.
Yeah, violence just doesn't sound so good anymore.
Like, I'm not I'm not masculine enough to care.
Yeah, who cares?
Let's take some testosterone pills and see what this podcast will be like.
Ugh, I don't want to like,
we'll become Joe Rogan, the alpha.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of.
We'll be the Alpha Simpsons podcast.
Oh, hey, bro.
That doesn't sound fun. So, you know, Homer's freaked out, like I said, and he's worried that he'll never be a quarterback slash international super spy with a low T. But Dr. Hibbert assures him that it's an ailment that's very common for men his age. And Dr. Hibbert suggests the drug Vicodude, which will help with Homer's low T. And Homer's like mouth is like open wide, like just like how a pelican opens its beak. It just stays open the whole time, too. It's hilarious. He just wants to be pilled up. But before the pill can be administered, Homer has to watch a brief instructional video. Hibbert hands Homer his tablet, which preceding the video is an ad, of course, which frustrates Homer, who would kill the ad if only he had more testosterone. And the commercial features a stuffy professor on campus quad next to a chalkboard, proving his ivory tower theory, truck theory, that a single truck cannot be best in class torque, towing, and payload. And suddenly, a large truck slams into the educator while the driver of the vehicle shouts, "Think again, Professor Killjoy."
So we then see footage of the truck driving up a stony hill and over a cliff as the masculine voiceover artist invites you to man up to the road monster XXL 550. And as the ad mentions the truck's ultimate tow, we see it knock down several wind turbines, saying a screw you to wind power. It then mentions the pickup's ultimate payload as the driver pushes an entire football team into the bed of a truck, where the same driver is behind the wheel somehow waiting. Ultimate torque is the next feature, shown by pulling a blue whale out of the ocean. The ad ends by driving over the gravestone of Professor Richard Killjoy and speeding in neutral until his coffin is revealed from the ground. And as the corpse of the professor pops out, the driver shouts, "It's what a man drives!" And Homer is impressed.
"Dr. Hibbert, you're a genius! That truck is exactly what I need!"
"No, what you need is medication."
"Wrong again, Professor Killjoy. See you next year."
"Not if this chart is right."
Oh. "Peonies are such interesting flowers. They need less water, but..."
"Look what the doctor made me get!" "Ho-ho, you know it, baby. The engine growls just like that. And don't worry, it has maximum torque for its class and the highest possible ranking from J.D. Power."
"What about his associates?"
"Oh, you know they're on board."
"Look at me! I'm a payload!"
"This truck is an offense to everything I hold dear and..." "Oh, but it comes with a family subscription to Slapify, the music streaming service."
"I don't know what that is, but I'm great for having it."
The whole commercial was hands down very funny.
Yeah.
Such the, they got the tone right of like that typical male that was the skew to. And I live in an area in Southwest Washington, just north of Portland, that's literally like you see these guys in these trucks all the time. Like this is the majority of the people that I'm not putting anything down. I'm just saying like, this is like geared towards. I love the idea of, I think Schwartzwelder, you know, talking about Schwartzwelder last week, would love the idea of this truck just knocking down the wind turbines. Great visual. I like the joke is like he calls the professor Killjoy, like as like he's such a killjoy, but that's his actual name is Professor Killjoy.
Professor Richard Killjoy, spelled Q-U-E-L-L-J-O-I-E, which is a great visual thing. Also, just those words, those truck words, like payload and torque. And I mean, they bring it up later, but like as somebody who's not a quote unquote truck guy, this is also foreign to me. And I have siblings who are very interested in this kind of thing. And it just means nothing to me. So it's just funny to see that captured so well.
Oh, I agree. It means nothing to me. And I have nothing against a truck. In fact, I wish I had a truck. Also, is it like when Mars says Pyrenees, does it sound like she says panties?
Panties.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Panties.
And then the whole, like, when you're watching, like, truck commercials, like, it's always, like, the truck's rated J.D. Power Associates, you know, number one rated by J.D. Power Associates every year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that whole line of, like, Barkhamen and Associates.
You know it.
Fun stuff.
So in that clip, we heard Dr. Hibbert, and it was voiced by Kevin Michael Richardson, who had done some other voices. This is kind of the time when The Simpsons decided to use people of color to voice characters of color. And he first did it six episodes earlier in season 32, episode 13, Wad Goals. But this is kind of the first time that people started to complain online, like people who were like had a problem with this for some reason. And so this episode is considered a little controversial because of that, but also for some other reasons I will get into later on. But I just think it's silly that people would be freaked out, because I think, you know, what Kevin Michael Richardson has done for both Dr. Hibbert and Carl, I think he's put his own personality into it, and I think he's done a really good job. And I don't even really notice it anymore, so I don't know. I just don't understand why people are so bent out of shape by it.
Yeah, look, we all hate change. It's inevitable. Mm-hmm. I understand, you know, the people that are annoyed by it, but at this point, it's like, I just don't give a shit. It's, when it comes down to things like that, where you get so bent out of shape over something, just think of these two things. Is it hurting you physically or hurting someone else physically? And if the answer is no, then just let it go, as the great, wise, magnificent Adele Dazeem would say.
That's right.
Let it go. But yeah, so I mean, yeah, it's jarring at first, but you know, you got to learn and get over it. Look, in 20 years, The Simpsons, it's going to be none of the voices. They're all going to be dead. It's going to be either, hopefully not AI, because again, we stand with the WGA.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hopefully it's voice actors that we don't know about yet. You know, like new talent will have to start taking over these roles eventually, because I'm going to say, kids, Simpsons isn't going anywhere.
Right. No, that's going to be there for a while, I think.
Yeah. There's a kid who's born right now who's going to be a future Simpsons writer. There's a girl born right now who's going to be the future voice of Lisa Simpson.
True.
I've just decided Simpsons is never going to end. This podcast will, but cartoon will never end.
Yeah, we might stop next week, but...
We might have already stopped. We don't know.
Yeah.
Are we even recording anymore?
Will we ever?
I don't think so.
No.
Look, we just like The Simpsons and the ha-has, and that's what we're here for.
That's right.
So back to The Simpsons. Homer is impressed with the rear view camera, where Marge is seen grimacing. And Homer notices the infrared feature, which shows Marge glowing fiery red and yellow, then walking into the house and beating her head against the wall in frustration.
A lot of fun. I know that they've used infrared gags before, but just the fact that she's banging her head against the wall is just a lot of fun.
She's so mad about everything. I love it.
So in Lisa's bedroom, she checks out Slapify's algorithm to see if it can predict her taste. She fills out a profile noting her age, 8, her gender, female, and how she heard about the service, truck. And then the app begins to suggest songs for Lisa, starting with a pop tune that Lisa finds to be too trendy for her taste. Next, it's play some radio-friendly alternative music, which Lisa appreciates a bit more, but still sways a bit too mainstream for her. And so some of the songs that Lisa didn't like include...
Emo Amen by Terror at the Nightclub, a parody of Say Amen by Panic at the Disco.
Dance Floor DOA by Dr. J, a parody of Dr. Dre.
Sorry, Not Sorry, Generally Sorry Remix by Empanada.
Dynamatic by Lil Bigfoot.
Ugly Cry by Vanessa, a parody of Ugly Cry by Victoria.
And Soul Patrol by STB, a parody of BTS, the K-pop band that formed in Seoul, Korea.
Which band would you listen to? I probably would have to do the Emo Amen Terror at the Nightclub, maybe.
Yeah, I think I want to listen to Dance Floor DOA.
Yeah, that'd be good too. But I don't think I could listen to Soul Patrol by STB, the BTS. I just think BTS and all their fans are... And that's what I really think about you fans of BTS.
Wow. Those are some harsh words, Craig. But, you know, we cut that out for our own safety.
That's probably a good call.
Craig, do you use Spotify as a streaming service?
Yeah, of course I use Spotify. I only use it for the ads.
Of course.
In fact, I love Spotify for podcasts. In fact, the best way to listen to this podcast is through Spotify. You could even ask us a question through that app and leave a review. We love you, Spotify.
Spotify, you're the best. But they do have this thing called DJ, which is a DJX, and it's really creepy because it just makes playlists for you based on what you listen to. And it'll be like, oh, here's a band you haven't listened to in 3 months.
And they're like, oh, I miss that.
And yeah, it's nice, but it talks to you too.
Oh, weird. Like, I haven't tried that.
A voice, like, I'm just going to be here.
There's something about music in the summertime, those long days, outside, windows down. So I went back into your archives to pick out some songs you listened to the most in summer's past. See if it warms you up.
So that's my DJX. It's going to play some sloppy voice. But yeah, just an interesting feature.
I didn't know about that feature until now. Where is that? I'm looking on the Spotify now. Now, boring podcast for us to hear. Or the fans that listen to it, they're looking through their phone now. Cool.
So mine pops up, but try going to search and then made for you. And there should be a feature called Uniquely Yours. And there'll be...
Oh, I see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you get Robot Man to talk?
Just click on DJ, and it should.
Where's the DJ?
So it'll be under Uniquely Yours. It'll be like a blue-black round with a green circle with kind of a line through it.
Yeah, I don't see anything.
Hmm.
That's not fun for the audience to listen to. What I like about the Spotify is it's a thing in a collective conscious of this like pop culture where we all have Spotify at this moment. Like majority of people have Spotify and we all love to share like the year end things. It's like one of like our favorite things now as a society is like, we can't wait till the year end Spotify. Like what was our number one song? And you know, it's just a fun thing to have. And it's yeah, I love Spotify.
Yeah, Spotify is great. I do suggest like going to Bandcamp every now and then and throwing your favorite artist a few bones, especially on like Bandcamp Fridays where they get 100% of the profits. But
true. If you're listening to your standard pop music, that's like your Taylor Swift's, it's fine on Spotify, but your indie bands that, you know, I would support them through Bandcamp. You're right. My bad.
No, you're fine. And also, you know, just I'm just saying support because, you know, the streaming services don't always pay.
Yes.
The artists so well. So, I mean, whenever you can, if you want to buy a record or some merch to support your artists, it's always just a nice thing to do.
Yeah. Buy the LPs, guys. All right. Well, Lisa's cursed with good taste, but knows a good song is merely a click away. As day turns to night, Lisa has unliked nearly 3,000 songs until she reaches the prompt. If you hate everything, you might like this.
Quillaby? Never heard of him. Quillaby and his British bandmates, the Snuffs, dominated the 80s indie scene with their brand of literate, sardonic. Music that focused on Quillaby's obsessions, especially his militant vegetarianism.
The flesh that you cover with cheese is proof of your moral disease. It's death for no reason, and death for no reason is hamburger homicide.
Quillaby's music is so smart and dour and jangly, and no one has seen him in 30 years. He's a famous recluse. And his commitment to animal rights is so inspiring. Oh, I just had the most amazing idea.
Lisa doesn't like it when other people talk.
So Ralph saying that Lisa doesn't like it when other people talk. A couple weeks back, we talked about how Ralph is kind of a Watu, the Watcher. He's all-seeing and all-knowing. And I kind of think that speaks to it because he's just acknowledging what this human is doing, kind of watching her exist rather than existing with her.
The most complex character is Ralph Wiggum.
Yep, that's right.
Voice sounds familiar. Is that Morrissey?
No, it's actually clearly a parody of Morrissey and the Smiths, but that's, you know, good old Doctor Strange, the Sherlock himself. It's Benedict Cumberbatch playing Quillaby, who wrote all the original songs with Brett McKenzie, half of the New Zealand comedy musical duo Flight of the Conchords.
What's your favorite Smith song?
Oh, boy. So I don't like the Smiths.
Yeah, they were never my jam, so I don't really have favorite Smiths songs. I always get the Smiths and the Cure kind of confused. So I'm like, oh, I like this song. And like, oh, no, that's a Cure song. I'm like, okay, I like the Cure then.
Yeah, I think that before our time, people would say, like, are you an Elvis person or a Beatles person or a person or a Rolling Stones person? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a similar division between Cure and the Smiths. It's not to say that they don't overlap and you can't like both, but I think that typically speaking, people like one or the other. And for me, the Cure is a much better band. I really like the early stuff. I think they did a lot more interesting stuff. Just the Smiths were always a band that I never really understood, but I knew a lot of girls in high school that I had crushes on.
Of course.
Who really liked the Smiths. So I'd try and get into them. So I'd buy their CDs, but it just never really spoke to me. It always seemed so brooding and the guitar seems so like light and airy. I know that Johnny Marrs is a very skilled musician, but it just never spoke to me. And as much as I like, you know, punk rock and whatever, I am a Doors fan.
Hey, Steve, quick question. Who plays bass?
There is no bass.
That's right. The Doors had no bass.
The Gypsies had no home.
Don't let it scare you. Let that free you. Let that liberate you. When you're free flying with the Doors, man, you don't need no safety net. Sorry. Okay. I'll let you continue talking.
But a lot of people like to shit on the Doors, talking about how it's an arrogant, snobby, kind of overly cocky poet leading them, and then it's just bad pop music in the background. And I could not agree more about the Doors, but that is exactly how I describe the Smiths.
Look, and if you think about the Doors, when we were in high school, we loved that stuff because we weren't really that far apart in age to Jim Morrison. And he passed away at age 27, supposedly.
That's right.
But like, you know, he was in his early 20s writing those songs. So, yeah. And yeah, Steve and I are Doors fans because we grew up with that. I went to the Rolling Stones. They ranked all 73 songs of the Smiths.
Mm-hmm.
But the number one song is like the one that everyone knows. And it's There Is a Light That Never Goes Out. Isn't like their like biggest song? Of course, yeah. You know, that's... But that is a good song. But also it's like, well, I like a couple songs. But the next song going by is A Half a Person. I don't even know that song.
I don't know. Yeah.
That was number two. Number three, you have I Know It's Over. Number four, This Charming Man, which I think I know that one.
Yeah.
How Soon Is Now is number five. I know that one.
Mm-hmm.
Panic is number six.
Panic Queen on the streets.
Number seven is The Queen Is Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Too soon, guys. Too soon. Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now is number eight. Number nine is Handsome Devil. And number 10 is Reel Around the Fountain.
Hmm.
Steve, their worst song, their number 73rd song, is Accept Yourself from 1983.
Hmm.
Yeah. There you go. There's our Smiths talk for this week's episode. I guess mm-hmm. we'll talk about the Smiths later in next week's episode.
All right. It's our Smiths corner. Next week, we'll talk about Ozzy and...
No. Next week, we're going to talk about Van Halen or Van Hagar.
There we go.
Do we like David Lee Roth or do we like Sam Hagar?
Or the third less popular guy, Michael. There's a third guy, too, who's not nobody knows about.
Michael Landon.
Yes.
Because he died and then Sam Hagar took over. No, not many people know about that little transition.
First, he got kicked out of AC/DC.
He was singing the wrong lyrics to Highway to Hell. He was saying Highway to Heaven.
Right. And then he joined Van Halen.
Yeah. Brian Johnson was like, oi, it's Highway to Hell, me matey. He's Australian, Steve.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lisa executes her big idea, standing on the lunch table in the cafeteria, calling for the attention of her fellow students. She announces inspiration from her new favorite musician, whom you've probably never heard of, and Lisa declares this to be the first Mushroom Monday. She then offers everyone an all-vegan mushroom taco. Nelson is confused, as mushrooms are chairs for toads. But Lisa quotes her newly beloved artist by saying, "The flesh that you cover with cheese is proof of your moral disease."
Put that on a shirt and smoke it.
Yeah.
Steve, I made you some mushroom tacos, but Lunch Lady Dora style, so have a bite.
Tasty.
Now you want to know why that's good?
Well, why?
Okay, well, despite Nelson's confused guy, as he was grossed out by the mushroom tacos, Lisa invites her fellow classmates to dig on the delicious tacos, which feature three kinds of mushrooms, portobello, shiitake, and bacon. See, that's why you like it.
What? Yeah.
So Lisa and Steve just spit out their food. And Lunch Lady Dora explains that the assumed word vegan was a portmanteau of vegetables plus bacon. Vegan. Lisa's horrified that she ate meat, scrubbing her own tongue with a broccoli spear. Nelson mocks her, saying, "This taco had a mom." As the students and staff all enjoy their tacos nearly as much as they enjoy laughing at Lisa, she runs off crying. And then back in her bedroom, she finds solace with an unlikely friend.
"Everyone at my school is a jerk. Why are they so mean? Why? Is the problem me?"
"The problem is never you. It's those sour-breathed, know-nothing sheep who graze the blighted meadows of your so-called school."
"Gah? Okay, it was probably just a bacon hallucination. Quillaby isn't actually in my room. I'm traumatized by eating meat."
"You must stop talking to yourself. People will think you've gone mad."
"You're not the real Quillaby. You're imaginary. I've gone crazy."
"Master of the obvious, ensconced in her dreadful red frock."
"I don't want to be crazy. Not this kind of crazy. Just get out of here."
"Hey, Lise, what you pointing at? Some bacon you want to eat?"
"I've got a pig nose. Want to eat me?"
"Greg, I've got a pig nose. Do you want to eat me?"
"No."
Okay. Another controversy of this episode is that Lisa is hallucinating Quillaby, Lee Singer of the Snuffs, who's obviously a parody of Merritt Morrissey. And some critics, mostly no like mental health organizations or anything, mostly just grumpy fans who didn't like the fact that they were making fun of the Smiths, felt that Lisa was portraying mental illness in a negative light, which, I mean, I guess is valid, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I didn't see that from that point that this is Lisa having a
Like, I don't feel like it's a mental crisis. I think, you know, we all have imaginations and, you know, I mean, like, there are so many other times when other characters have seen, not just on The Simpsons, but in media in general, seen an imaginary figure, like, goes back to the Flintstones with the Great Gazoo, you know, like, Ralph would see a leprechaun sometimes, or, you know.
Homer saw Ray Romano walking, carrying down a case of shingles.
Right. So
no one else did.
I mean, yeah, if it is offensive, I'm sorry, but I don't know that it is.
Yeah, I don't see that way either, because I think we all grow through, especially at, well, maybe a little bit later, you know, the fudging with like the time, but isn't like age-wise, like 8-year-olds probably don't feel this way, but like in high school, you know, this is pretty much an episode, they're trying to write an angsty teen episode, but you kind of get away with that with Lisa because she's so advanced and mature mm-hmm. for her age that it works. And everybody as a teenager goes through like an identity crisis.
Right.
And so this is kind of what I see. I don't see this as like a mental illness.
Right. And I do think that, you know, when you're looking to figure out who you are, like you say, finding bands that you can associate with or glom onto are huge. One thing that I will say about Smith, even though I'm not a fan, that music is really good at like giving you like a ground floor for your personality. Like I grew up like listening to a lot of punk rock, and that kind of was like, oh, I get, that means that I can question authority. It kind of set like areas to explore. And I think the Smiths do that really well.
Yep.
Especially for somebody like Lisa, who is very literate and sardonic in her own manner.
Right. So it's nice to see this side that we all kind of can relate to growing up as a teen, that you'll find your voice through music. And I always felt, again, this is me like not preaching, but to me, it was weird that like kids our age would listen to like the pop 100 stations. Like we always weirded out by like, how is that your personality? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whereas now I understand. I don't know. I mean, music's music and whatever you're attracted. Like there's always like people going to like the base of like what is the most popular. Then I'm going to listen to that because that's going to make me cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like for instance, our age group, you know, I think the biggest people were like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC were really popular during our time as like teenagers.
Right.
But we didn't like hang out with people that listened to that.
No, and I, you know, I think it's music is fine for everybody, and you kind of find your own thing. And yeah, here's
me, a 40-year-old man, talking about how pop music is lame back in the 90s. But I listened to like Taylor Swift, who's like the biggest pop star of all time. And like, how does her music really like affect me? But it's like, well, I have memories of growing up. I'm like, oh, this would speak to me then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking like her newer stuff, not the old stuff. But you know, it's just whatever, you know, catches your ear. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing of like growing up when you're young, you're thinking, well, I want to date someone who likes the same music as me. And it's like, at this, and you know, when you get older in your 30s, you're just like, who gives a shit? I just want someone just to be with, and not,
right.
Doesn't matter what music they like.
I don't know.
They should be their own independent person, their own independent woman. Part one, Steve.
That's right. You get where I'm about to go. Yeah, like Laura and I listen to probably very little of the same music. Maybe Vince Guaraldi around Christmas time. That's like probably like where our Venn diagram begins and ends. But it doesn't matter because she likes pop music. She likes the rapping ladies like your Doja Cats or your Nicki Minaj's or your Megan Thee Stallions.
The only rapping ladies I like are the little ladies at the Hallmark who wrap my Christmas presents every year.
Yeah.
Dumb.
They like to wrap presents in a certain way. Like when you're a teenager, it seems so important to have this this band of people who completely align with what you like, and that makes up who you are. But I think as you get older, you realize like, oh, that's part of me, but it's not the only part of me. And just being a good person is what matters.
Yep, exactly. And remember Craig's rule, the two rules you have to live by. Is it hurting you or is it hurting someone else? The answer is no, then don't worry about it.
That's right. But some people who are hurting are Bart and his friends.
Oh. Because Bart and his friends are mocking Lisa, and she begins to cry.
Yeah.
Then the imaginary image of Quillaby whispers in Lisa's ear, and she responds to her brother saying, slowly, almost imperceptibly, your friends are growing tired of you. Bart laughs at the remark, saying he's the drumstick of the chicken bucket, and he does so. Milhouse and Nelson share a furtive look at one another, and Bart denies that his friends are growing sick of him. And Milhouse is quick to agree, of course, but once again, Nelson and Milhouse look at each other. But this time, Bart notices. Nelson denies the glance, but again, looks at Milhouse. And Lisa laughs at herself. proud of the chaos she's caused in Bart's social circle. Is that weird that you see, like, Nelson is cowering in front of Bart's eye? Like,
yeah, it's kind of weird.
That's the truth. Yeah. Is Bart the alpha? I always thought Nelson was the alpha.
I think that he probably is the alpha, but Bart thinks that he is. And so it's interesting to think that maybe, like, Nelson and Milhouse hang out without Bart and they talk shit about him. That's kind of funny to think about.
All right. Here's my new pitch. Nelson and Milhouse, when they're in their teens, start their own podcast.
Oh, boy. I like this. Yeah.
Essentially, Nelson and Milhouse are us. But we were never bullies.
No.
Were we?
I don't think so. Mm. I mean, it could be like the 30 Rock thing where Liz Lemon goes back to her high school reunion and everyone hates her because she was a bully, but she thought that she was the dork.
I think because I relate more to like a Milhouse than a Nelson.
Right.
We're more like Nelson. We're like Wendell and one of the other kids I can't remember their names of because they're just not in the
crowd. Exactly right. We are the kids that you can't remember the name of. Oh,
Wendell and Lewis. There we go.
Yeah.
One of those characters. But haven't we already decided that we're the two other barflies that don't have or they have names, but they never speak?
Yeah.
That's us.
Right. Sam and Dave.
Sam and Dave. There you go. All right, Steve, let's hear what Lisa is all about right now in this clip.
All right.
You guys are not getting tired of me.
No, I was just yawning because I stayed up late thinking about your pranks.
Still so fresh.
Quillaby, you completely ruined my brother with just one sentence.
Thank you.
Oh, there's nothing more tiresome than gratitude.
I think I'm gonna like hallucinating you.
Here's a gift. Put this on your faded army jacket.
Oh my god, you think I'm cool enough to wear a faded army jacket?
Keep in mind I'm merely a product of your fractured psyche.
Oh, shut up. Don't ruin it.
I definitely had crushes on girls with the army jacket back in high school. Even, what's her name? Sarah Gilbert in the episode of Bart. Like, that was the type of girl I was totally attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
And then even in, like, high school, I mean, I wore an army jacket many years. Not the camouflage ones, the camo ones, but just, like, the olive.
The green. Yeah.
The green. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to me, yeah, there's nothing cooler than going to, like, Andy and Baxter, local military supply store, and, like, getting a messenger bag with, like, the pilot wings on it or, yeah, a nice, like, army jacket.
We still have Andy and Bax. It's still a local business here. Yeah, it's an army surplus store in Portland. And great prices, just a lot of fun stuff in that store.
Yeah, it's great because not only can you buy, like, old, like, pea coats or, like, naval patches, they also have random stuff, like, they have, like, grappling hooks or luchador masks.
They also have, like, inactive grenades. You can just buy some, like, grenades, bandoliers without, like, bullets in them, and, like, camping supplies, but, like, old-school camping, not, like, your modern, like, camping equipment where it's all Gore-Tex and, you know, waterproof with, like, USB chargers in it, but, like, canvas tents, tarps, where you need to, like, really rough it, but in the sort of trucker kind of guy way.
Yeah, like a classic fashionable kind of way.
Yeah. Also, then that clip, too, with Nelson just doing, like, his fake laugh, and then walking away and then doing the real laugh. Fun stuff.
Yeah.
I like this idea of Nelson and Milhouse teaming up without Bart.
Because, like, they probably get real tired of Bart's, like, always, like, neediness. So they probably bonded over, like, oh, man, Bart kind of sucks. Like, yeah.
Milhouse would say something very profound, and then Nelson, like, will have a conversation. It's like, wait, we're actually talking like normal people, and not just, you know, like Nelson that would be like, yeah, look, I have a pretty tough childhood too. My father leaving, single mother raising me. But God, Bart's dad is just kind of a dumbass.
That's right, because they both bond over, like, having, you know, not broken families, but, you know, some different family dynamics. And they're probably just like, yeah, our dads might suck, but at least they're not Homer.
Yeah, like, Milhouse would be like, yeah, my dad's pretty lame, but, like, he's not coming with hairball schemes every week.
Yeah.
Until season 34, when he's, like, all Flat Earther type of guy. the Karen of the Simpsons now is Kirk Van Houten.
Yeah.
All the old Simpsons fans out there that don't watch the new episodes, and they love Kirk Van Houten, and we tell them that Kirk Van Houten is a total Karen. What are they going to think?
I think we're kind of safe, because does anybody truly love Kirk Van Houten? Like, he's an unlovable loser. Like, when we had that episode with Gil, we came to the conclusion that Gil, you know, we like him because he's lovably pathetic, but Kirk is kind of unlovably pathetic.
Yeah, you're right. No one likes a Kirk. All right, we figured it out again.
Yeah. So back to The Simpsons. In the driveway, Homer is polishing his new truck. Bart walks up to him and tries to embarrass his father in the same manner that Lisa did to him, saying that his friends are growing tired of him. But Homer laughs at the idea of his friends tiring of him, since he's so chock full of testosterone. And then Bart wants to ride in the truck, but as Homer puts it, trucks aren't for driving. They're for doing kick-ass truck stuff.
Yeah, so Bart asks his father if he's actually done any truck stuff. And Homer hands Bart a bandana, and Homer drives his truck through a rocky field. Bart and Santa's little helper bounce in the back. Next, Homer uses a winch to pull Captain McAllister's houseboat to shore, despite the captain yelling, "I don't want this." Homer then travels to Gord's Gravel and fills up the back of his truck with gravel. He rides up and down a hill with the haul and then returns Gord's to have the gravel unloaded. The gravel restocking fee may be $1,000, but it's totally worth it. Homer then ties his winch to a tree stump and pulls it from the ground. We actually learn that the stump was Shel Silverstein's The Giving Tree, and several children are left crying and horrified by Homer's vehicular carnage. I like how this whole thing is just like a straight up parody of truck commercials too, with like the gravel, like driving on mountains. Right. Like, who does this?
Like, car commercials are silly in general, but truck commercials take the cake. Just like that whole aggressive,
like a rock.
Yeah. Will Arnett telling you to buy a truck, yeah, in his deepest gravelly voice. It's silly. So Lisa and her imaginary friend, crooner friend, take a walk around Springfield, and Kilby's happy to be out of the house and away from Maggie, who he considers to be a small, boring woman. Looking around, Kilby feels that Springfield is quite similar to his own hometown, dismal, and nothing good will ever come of it, except for maybe Lisa. He then goes on to insult the Pratt Parade, first mocking Ned Flanders by saying that facial hair is not a substitute for personality, and then he tells Sherry O'Terry that 2 times 0 is still 0. He accuses Reverend Lovejoy of being drunk on early morning apricot brandy.
So this is all still going through Lisa's mind, right?
Yeah, she's kind of thinking these insults to herself.
The Pratt Parade. That's like the box office of 2023. Right. Everything's Chris Pratt.
You too.
I've never had an apricot brandy. I'm not a big fan of the apricot in general.
Interesting.
It's not like something like, I mean, I don't hate it, but it's something, right, I go out to purchase. Like a dried apricot, I think is perfectly fine, like a trail mix, right?
Yeah. It's never not like one of my top tier fruits, I don't think.
So have you had a apricot brandy?
I've had an apple brandy. I've probably tried an apricot brandy, but I don't know. Maybe I haven't. I don't think I have, actually.
Well, we should have bought some apricot brandy for this podcast, but we're dumb.
Yeah, we are.
We'd never plan ahead. We really should next time. Lisa laughs and asks Quillaby if there is anyone that he likes. He then breaks into a moody song, dancing on the statue of Jebediah Springfield, singing about his inability to smile. Quillaby then dons an old-timey swimsuit and croons about wanting to drown in his bathtub. After mentioning praying for his death, he says that everyone is horrid except him and possibly Lisa. He and Lisa dance around while Lisa sings backup. She then sports a new look featuring an old army jacket, black skirt, and chunky black boots. Credits pop up on screen, reminiscent of the music video shown on MTV back when the M stood for music. Am I right, folks?
Hey,
now I got rid of a Total Request Live, right? Or not TL, but no, the news.
Yeah, it's Kurt Loder's out of a job. So in the music room of Springfield Elementary the following morning, Dewey Largo conducts his orchestra in a rollicking, if slightly atonal, rendition of On Top of Old Smokey. But Lisa has other plans.
I thought it was On Top of the Old Spaghetti.
That's what it was. I got it wrong.
Lisa Simpson, those measures were supposed to be pianissimo, but instead they were sforzando and scherzando.
Why look at him even that one?
Well, would you like to share your private tee-hees with the class?
I was just thinking, every day you wave that wand, and yet nothing magical ever happens.
You're a smart mouth, little sass pants.
And you're a sad little man whose best days never happened.
I'm not sad. I'm happy. And 5'8 is a very nice height for a fella. Very nice.
Lisa, I enjoyed that. And I enjoy nothing.
The animation is great because it's just like a parody is the opening credits of The Simpsons in the band room.
Right, right.
Even to the point like Milhouse is playing whatever that is. the horn thing.
The Van Houten horn.
Yeah. The Van Horn. Van Horn. That's a little town you could visit in Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, yeah.
Is that's where the Van Horn, that's where all like the criminals kind of hang out. And so if you like open fire in Van Horn, like everyone starts firing at you.
That's right. Yeah. Man, I miss that game.
God, this game is so good. You know, I've gone back and played the game like 3 times.
Kind of like, I don't know, like I've been playing another video game that's kind of a bit more in the zeitgeist and it's not doing it for me. So maybe I should go back to that.
Should we go back to Red Dead? I was doing so good at my replay because I did all like the hunting and all that stuff. I got all that stuff done. Mm-hmm. Like all like the made my own bags and clothing. I got all that done.
That's great.
I got that one legendary panther you have to kill, and that's a tough one to get.
Well, you were with your legendary panthers. I was with a legendary cougar. Judith Light.
I'm trying to think. Who's the legendary cougar? Joan Collins?
Yeah.
All right. She's still alive, right?
I think so.
She's like in her 90s. Just like the 90s Lisa. She looks all like she's from the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so Principal Skinner calls Homer and Marge into his office to discuss Lisa's newfound behavior that's wry, sardonic, and poetically world-weary. As Marge tells Skinner that snobby, judgy British crooner is responsible for Lisa's sass, Homer lurks out the window to see groundskeeper Willie in his tractor, stuck in the mud. So as Marge bursts into tears, Seymour tells her that many children are using Slapify as a gateway to moody music from the past, such as Martin Prince, who is swinging and on the swing set, singing along to the hardcore metal music of Hall & Oates, Maneater.
Yikes, that sounds scary. Sounds like a dangerous metal song.
You know what's so funny is, I know like they're in present day listening to this, but I probably was like Martin with my Walkman swinging, mm-hmm. listening to Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
At his age.
I mean, they're kind of undeniably good, Hall & Oates.
There's a person that we knew who used to freak with the karaoke bar. I remember she was talking about when she was a kid, she thought Hall & Oates was, the band was called Hall & Oates, like A-U-L-I-N apostrophe space O-A-T-S, like Hall & Oates, like oat brands.
Yeah.
That was the name of the band, Hall & Oates.
I mean, it kind of makes sense.
I mean, if you want to do a Hall & Oates cover band, take it.
Yeah, that's great. Have like the Quaker guy driving a big old pickup truck.
So we'll dress like the Quaker Oates guy and just cover Hall & Oates songs, but like in barbershop quartet.
Oh, yeah. I could see like a 4-part harmony of Maneater. Yeah.
She's I like
Maneater.
Yeah.
All right, we need 2 more people to start a, Steve and I aren't singers, but we're going to need 2 more gentlemen to start a barbershop quartet. No, we won't be called the B-sharps squared. We'll be called Hall & Oates, and we only do Hall & Oates cover songs.
Yeah, bring your own arm garters. So Marge vows to take this seriously and have a deep conversation with Lisa, but she then looks to Homer for support, but he's outside in his truck pulling Willie out of the mud. The Scotsman shouts, "You don't tow me, I tow you." And Homer tells him to stop resisting and to surrender to his mighty torque.
Who is he, a cop?
Hey, ACAP, not a political podcast. The 2 men get out of their respective vehicles and pull them with their own bare hands.
That's a
very, very funny visual. Meanwhile, Marge tries to connect with Lisa.
What has gotten into you? You used to be such a happy little girl.
When?
Okay, but never like this. With the sour attitude and the black booties. You've become a crab. No, a pill.
Lisa, darling, please silence the din.
That's it. I'm canceling your music subscription. Jiggly. And bloop.
Shocking.
Oh, we got some other apps there on Lisa's phone. We got a Chore Monkey.
Got Days.
Where's It?
Rivet.
Paid Pal.
And Gulp.
A lot of fun little parody jokes in this episode. So is Chore Monkey a Task Rabbit?
Yeah, and I would say Days is probably Waze.
Where's It? I'm not familiar with that.
Probably another mapping app, I would assume.
Ribbit?
I believe that's Reddit.
Oh, that makes sense. Paid Pal would be PayPal. Gulp would be Yelp.
Yeah, I would assume so.
All right. We solved the episode.
We're done. No, I like Marge saying jiggly and bloop because it's such a mom way of deleting an app. Like, she just remembers, like,
yeah,
by rote how to do things. Like she's probably had an iPhone for like 15 years, but still kind of struggling to master it.
I still think Marge probably just still has a flip phone.
Yeah. Consumer cellular.
Yeah. Lisa carries the imaginary Quillaby in her arms and into the bedroom, which she is, of course, covered in memorabilia featuring the vegan post-pop star in his band, The Snuffs. Lisa can't believe her mother would take away the one place where she can hear Quillaby's music. Quillaby then directs Lisa to her computers, which conveniently shows an ad for an upcoming Bumbershoot festival, which features Quillaby and The Snuffs in their first appearance in 30 years. Lisa is excited at the prospect of seeing the real Quillaby live.
Ooh.
And in person. The fake Quillaby says that his live performances are like a three-hour dance party in a freshly dug grave, quoting David Freak from an 87 issue of Rolling Stone. Hey, we already referenced Rolling Stone magazine this episode. Like, she took down her Bleeding Gums Murphy's poster.
Yeah.
That sucks. There would have been a nice, like, side story of Lisa, like, losing her Spotify and then Quill being like, you know, this music's on vinyl. And then, like, Lisa starting, like, a whole vinyl collection.
That would be a lot of fun going, like, that'd be a fun set piece of going to...
Oh, Jack Black's vinyl store. Then you have Jack Black be on the show.
Right.
Even though he's been on the show. I mean, Jack White, not Jack Black.
Right. I was going to say, Jack Black has a comic book store.
Yeah. Jack White, the White Stripes Jack White, because he has, like, a record store. So that'd be kind of funny.
She could also go to Suicide Notes, formerly Good Time Music or whatever it was, from the Homer Palooza episode.
Oh, that'd be kind of like a funny poster. Is they have like a vintage Hubba Palooza poster from like 96 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And like featuring Smashing Pumpkins and Peter Frampton, also the Human Cannonball.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I want that would have been hilarious. Ah, just a fun callback. Anyways.
Yeah, but Lisa feels that Marge will never let her go to the music festival. And even if she did, Lisa doesn't have enough money. So after all, those tickets cost like 5 Lego sets, which is very expensive, actually.
It's probably true, yeah.
Quillaby tells Lisa to look in her jacket pocket, where she finds Homer's Roadmaster XXXL 550 branded credit card, which has the credit card number 4110123033400017 and expires on March 1st.
When I saw that, it was so weird because like that was like two numbers off on my credit card, which was the 0017. It's 0020.
Wow.
And then mine expires March 13th, 2027.
That's interesting. I think also on the back of it, it shows a credit card code that's very similar to yours.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
is that?
Oh, it's 022.
022. Okay.
And I just want to, can I change the subject real quick?
Sure.
I just thinking like, I want to change my last name to my mother's maiden name,
mm-hmm.
which is Johansson.
Okay.
And I kind of want to go back to the street I was born on, which of course we all know was Maple Avenue.
Maple Avenue.
Yeah. And did I ever tell the time I graduated from Franklin High School? Oh, I love that high school.
You know, that reminds me of the name of my first pet was Dusty. What was the name of your first pet, Craig?
Oh, well, it was Indy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. You know how, like, some people say that, you know, your birthday makes you unique or, like, where sure. you're born? I think your social security number really kind of colors who you are. So, like for me, you know, there's, like, a 1-1 and a 7-2-2-3. But what's your social security number, Craig?
Steve, I'm not Goldblum. I'm not giving that out.
Ah, fine. So Lisa has a Tyler Durden-esque moment wondering if Quillaby stole the card or she did. The singer explains that it's a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, saying that sometimes he identifies as imaginary and sometimes he throws a pillow at Lisa, which he does, resulting in a pillow fight.
So downstairs, Barge is frantically making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches one after the other. And Maggie crawls by and looks confused, but, you know, Marge explains that sandwich making calms her stress nerves. Maggie hops through the doggy door just as Homer walks in. So Maggie's just like, I'm done with this. Like, could you imagine, like, a parent just letting their kid walk through the doggy door? And it's like, yeah, it's fine.
Whatever.
Yeah. Is it going to the backyard? Or is it going to the, because Homer walks in wearing a shirt with a truck and a big heart around it. And he begins to dig in the PB&Js. So Marge has a revelation while Lisa and Quillaby sneak out the house. So yeah, he's coming in from the back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, makes sense. All right, let's hear this clip.
Lisa is solemn, dressing weird, obsessed with English music. Our 8-year-old has turned into a teenager. Well, from now on, I'm going to pay very close attention to her.
Marge, little girls are a lot like all-wheel anti-lock brakes. When road conditions are unpredictable...
We're talking about your daughter, not a vehicle.
Well, both do have maximum torque for their class.
Will you shut up about the damn truck?
But the truck is who I am. It's a perfect fit for my manly off-road lifestyle.
Oh, really? You hate the outdoors. You've never been camping. You've never hauled or towed anything or shown any interest in hauling or towing. And please, tell me the meaning of the word torque.
The smoke hole where the truck's farts come out?
Torque is the tendency of a force to rotate the body to which it is applied. Like this! Homer J. Simpson, you are not a truck guy!
What a great scene of, like, Marge essentially just snapping everyone back into reality. Or, like, realizing the situation of the problem at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's her job to fix things. Even though, like, well, there's nothing wrong with Lisa, of course. But, like, just snapping Homer into his reality that he needs to... Because he's not a truck guy.
Right. I like. You know, I really like her calling him out on what torque is.
Just like the hole where the truck's farts come out. Very funny. And today Steve learned what a torque was. So
yeah.
I like in the background too when Lisa's escaping for the through the tier house. She still is like helping Willoughby, who's also a victim of imagination. But was she just like just grabbing his ass?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Grabbing the imaginary ass of Morrissey. I mean, Willoughby.
Right. So Homer sobs, drying his tears with sandwiches while Marge tackles an actual problem. Lisa's pre-teen rebellion. But when she goes to talk to her daughter, she discovers that she's gone. But where? Why, on the Bummer Chute Express bus, where she and Willoughby sport VIP passes around their necks. Lisa is elated to be going to her first music fest with her best friend, or at least her very best imaginary friend.
Hmm.
It then dawns on her that she did need to buy two VIP passes, but she had her vision of Willoughby laugh it off. The other writers headed to Bummer Chute, including Smithers, Bumblebee Man, and Comic Book Guy, all stare at the little girl in the back of the bus laughing to herself.
Just a fun visual of there's no one there.
Mm-hmm.
So does it mean like when they're walking through the festival, it's just like a floating pass?
Yeah.
All right. So back at 742 Evergreen Terrace, Marge figures out that Lisa's headed to an outdoor music whoop-de-doo, and Homer discovers that he's using his Visa credit card to spend $30 on sunscreen and $80 on a t-shirt. Homer's also charged $100 for the credit card updates.
Not a good credit plan.
I mean, that's normal prices. Is there a joke here? Like $30 for sunscreen, $80 for a t-shirt? That's like not a joke. That's what they would charge you at a concert.
Yeah, you're paying like $14 for a bottle of water.
Yeah. I went to Alanis Morissette this last summer. Was it last summer or summer before? And I think I just bought two like Pabst Blue Ribbons,
mm-hmm.
like tall boys, and I paid like $30 for that. Two.
Yeah.
It's like, geez, for Pabst.
Right.
I could have bought the entire Pabst Blue Ribbon factory for $30.
It's wild how concerts can gouge people like that.
Horrible. That's what makes me not want to go to concerts.
Yeah.
Than the people.
Of course. And the bands. So Lisa and Willoughby arrive at Bummer Chute, which offers millennial rock at baby boomer prices. The event has two of imaginary Willoughby's least favorite things, other people's music and other people. Lisa agrees, but is excited to see the real Willoughby, hoping to hear labor action at the biscuit factory or Simon has a birthmark. The snuff singer says that Lisa's hopes are dreadfully predictable, while Lisa grows tired of his constant complaining.
Oh, these bands are all rubbish and this sun is too sunny.
Willoughby, this festival is our dream. Stop being such a
pill? Oh, sorry, Marge.
Hey, I'm just trying to have a fun day.
Oh, a fun day. Why don't we all just have fizzy drinks and rainbow lollipops? Oh, la-di-da-di-da. Happy, happy, happy. Vacuous animals waiting for the slaughter.
He said that the sun was too sunny, and it made me think, sunny is a dumb way to describe the sun. Like, this apple is too apple-y. Like, it's sunny outside, meaning it's a lot of sun. It's just kind of silly.
It's not going to get any brighter, right?
Right.
I mean, actually, it will get brighter, but then eventually, like, explode, because we're going to go from, like, a yellow star to a red star, right? Is that how stars work?
I think so. And does that mean that we'll all be supermen and women and people?
Well, no, because we have to like move to a planet that has a yellow sun.
Oh, okay.
But Steve, we're going to be long dead before this happens.
Yay.
The sun won't turn red for at least another 20 days.
Okay. Well, we got time.
Yeah. But that's like dumb. No, you know what I mean? Like when you're a kid and you think things are so poetic, it's just like what you just said, like, let's think about this. Sun is too sunny. That's really dumb. That's not an oxymoron, but
I mean, I don't know if it's an oxymoron, but it is kind of just silly.
Yeah. It'd be saying the Annoy Grumpways are great podcasters.
There's an oxymoron about two morons.
Homer and Marge and Bart speed down the highway in Homer's truck with an awkward, angry silence, feeling the air. Bart mentions that it was good that Homer bought the truck, which sets off both Homer and Marge, who, both are angry. So Marge, because of Homer's incessant truck talk, and Homer, because Marge doesn't appreciate the awesomeness of the Road Monster, as Homer says that he wishes he was married to his son. Bart sits in the backseat pursuing his book, Wreaking Havoc with Your Parents' Marriage. I heard that. I was like, when I heard that, like, I had to do a double take, listen back, read the closed caption. That did Homer say he wishes he was married to his son? Very funny.
Also, I like Bart being so manipulative on their... You know, he doesn't have a lot to do this week. So he's just like, I'm going to be a little hellion. But on the grounds of the bummer shoot, Lisa yells at Quillaby for his constant whining. But the crooner corrects Lisa, saying that the term is whinging. Lisa used to think Quillaby just hated bad art and cruelty to animals and people who wear baseball hats. But she's learned that he just hates everything. The imaginary Quillaby assumes that mutual hate was what bonded them together. But before they can discuss further, the Snuffs take the stage, led by a considerably larger Quillaby.
Oh, dear God, no! I look like bloody Churchill. Shut your gobs, you wankers!
Woohoo! Wankers!
Can't you see this show is just a cash grab? I'm only here because I lost my fortune suing people for saying things about me that were completely true. Is this what I turned into? I'm greedy, I'm hateful, and my face looks like a syphilitic moon.
Well, it's not your fault you got old. Sting is old.
Old Sting's bloody gorgeous, and he knows it. Oh, boo-hoo! You could jeer while I enjoy this pastrami on rye.
But you're vegan.
I was, until I found out veganism was invented by foreigners, of whom there are far too many on this planet.
Oh, boy. Morrissey, I mean, will it be, I don't know what to say about that, but.
Have you seen Morrissey in the past few years?
No, I not a Morrissey guy, so I can't tell you.
So in the past few years, he's turned into a real xenophobic asshole, saying that foreigners are ruining England. And I don't think he's actually become I don't think he's turned his back on veganism, but he's become really kind of right wing and nationalist. And he's also put on a few pounds, which, you know, it happens.
We don't shame.
No. Shaming. But it's just he's become a shell of what he was. And like, I kind of feel like he was insufferable back then. And now he's that. But also, you know, has kind of some bad ideas politically.
Unlike us.
That's right. Because we're not a political podcast.
Exactly. Well, the older bloated Quillaby goes on to say that he hates the foreigners coming to the country and taking our jobs and sleeping with our men. And the audience member points out that Quillaby is a foreigner, while another shouts that he took the job of a sad, washed-up rock star. Lisa's horrified to learn that her new idol turned his back to veganism and that he's a, you know, huge racist.
Because this was clearly a parody of Morrissey, he reacted to this by, so his manager said that the Simpsons are hurtful and racist, referencing Hank Azaria's apology earlier in the week to people of Indian heritage for his longtime portrayal of Apu. He was particularly upset by the depiction of older Quillaby as an overweight and meat-eating. And then Morrissey himself wrote that the depiction was taunting a lawsuit, but he did not have the means to legally challenge it, adding, in a world obsessed with hate laws, there are none that protect me. Boo fucking who. He was also critical of the character's actor, Benedict Cumberbatch, saying, could he really be that hard up for cash that he would agree to bad rap another artist that harshly?
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's interesting because I looked at a lot of reviews of this episode while prepping for it. There's like a certain brand of review that is just really offended that they could ever talk ill of Morrissey, that they hate this episode for other reasons, just to kind of fan the flames of their being offended. And so there's a lot of one-star reviews, but it's mostly coming down to like, I don't like that you made fun of Morrissey because now he's fat and racist.
Well, I hate him because of that. I mean, yeah. The fat part, of course.
No, but like being, you know, yeah.
It's a joke. Yeah. I don't like racists. So if he's a racist, then fuck him.
Yeah. It's simple as that. But on stage, Quilby uses a sausage gun to shoot wieners into the crowd while singing, "Everything is horrid except for meat, so slag off to you." The concert goers, including a few from Homerpalooza, react negatively to Quilby's antics, while the imaginary Quilby gives Lisa some words of advice.
Lisa, dear. Don't let him happen to you. Try not to sneer at everything and listen to others at least a bit. Perhaps one out of five times, but I can't tell you which times.
Thanks, Quilby. You're the best imaginary friend a complicated 8-year-old could ever ask for. Oh, but I think we both know it's time for you to go. I'm gonna miss you. You bloody wanker.
Okay. I'm going to play a few songs off my new album. It's entitled Refugees Again.
I do think that the imaginary Quilby did make a good point. When you're going through puberty or pre-puberty and you're kind of getting into things, you tend to be angsty and you tend to like want to hate everything. And I understand that phase that you go through, but I think it's important to get out of it and just learn to appreciate some things rather than hate on everything, because it's such a better way of life to just like things than to like shit on other people's passions or things that they like.
And that's the point of this podcast.
Exactly.
Well, the crowd boos and throws their phones at the washed up crooner. After being hit by a laptop, Quilby falls to the ground where a roadie picks him up and stuffs him in a music case marked Singer. The audience members storm the stage and chaos ensues. So meanwhile, Homer and Marge and Bart are stuck in a stupid millennial traffic. Homer turns on the radio to learn that a riot is underway at the Bumbershoot Festival, and he thinks this is his chance to prove himself a truck guy.
So Homer shifts his truck from drive to riot and then to full-scale riot. He drives over the hood of the car in front of him, then over the hood of the car in front of that car. The truck then emerges from a wooded area, arriving right on the grounds of Bumbershoot. He drives through the VIP lounge, through a mist tent, and through a tank of LaCroix, which explodes upon impact. Very little flavor is spread everywhere. As the millennial concert goer destroys things while chanting misplaced anger, Lisa shouts for someone to save her from the highest car on the rocking Ferris wheel.
Do we not like LaCroix?
I like it just fine.
But it is kind of like flavorless. Like, I don't get it because like it has like little flavor. I'm like, why? I'm just going to drink water. I don't need this.
Yeah, I tend to like my sparkling water. I like sparkling water a lot, but I tend to just drink it plain because the flavor is, it's not enough.
I don't need it. I just give me water. That's all I need.
Yeah, water's good.
Yeah. Homer swings his wench and tosses it, clasping onto the guardrail of the Ferris wheel. He then hits the gas on his truck, hoping his torque won't fail him. As he drives off towing the Ferris wheel, the people all chant, "Truck, truck, truck, hooray!" Sadly, this was all just a dream, and we see Homer's laughing to himself asleep at the wheel of his truck. Let's hear a little clip of that.
Homer, wake up!
He fell asleep while driving?
No, we got stuck in traffic and ran out of gas. So Dad ate a garbage bag full of Mom's PB&Js and passed out.
Thanks for walking over and getting me.
Me and Truckee saved the day.
Sure you did, Homer.
Testosterone.
I don't know what came over me, Mom. I was sullen, moody, thought everybody except me was an idiot. Wait. Is that what being a teenager is like?
Well, sometimes, sweetie.
Were you ever like that?
Blue mascara is who I am, Mom. You're just jealous because you can't pull off hot pants. For your information, I was going to break up with Homer. But if you hate him, he must be great. Honey, whatever phases you go through, I'll always be waiting for you on the other side of the slam door.
Aw.
Very sweet, yes. Steve, I do like the whole idea that, like, what Homer did with the truck It's just a dream, because like it all seemed like it was so smooth that it was like, this is definitely something the Simpsons would do. Mm-hmm. But then it went, it grounded into reality of like, no, he just fell asleep at the, you know, it was the traffic jam, and he was just imagining he saved the day.
I love the chance too, like,
yeah,
misplaced anger and truck, hooray.
And it's definitely something that would just happen on a normal episode of The Simpsons.
Exactly.
I thought a fun little, like, just a little directorial input. I know I can't change it, but I think it would be kind of fun to see. I know it doesn't fit with canon, but just for an artistic type of thing, when we saw Marge in the past yelling at her mom and her parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I would have liked if it was Yeardley's voice first. And
oh,
then
I see.
Slowly transition into Julie Kavner's Marge voice. So like it started off like Yeardley would be voicing young Marge Simpson, and then each sequential flashback of yelling at the parents, it slowly becomes Julie Kavner's voice.
Gotcha. That's a good move. I like that. Because it is a beautiful scene, them sitting in the back of the truck, too. So, yeah, that would have added to it.
Yeah. The whole, and you're just reading the point that, like, everyone's pretty much the same when they're a kid, and then becoming an adult, you're just going to be angsty as a kid no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
Well, Craig, that is Panic on the Streets of Springfield. Why don't we take a break, and then we'll come back, and then we'll talk about what we thought of the show.
Sounds wonderful.
We'll be right back. We're back. Alrighty, Craig, let's finish up our discussion of Panic on the Streets of Springfield. We'll talk about the things that we liked, things we didn't like, things that made us laugh, maybe an MVJ, and what we thought about the episode, and then we'll talk about what we're watching next week. But before we do all that, let's give a gift, you know? Old Quillaby's kind of a sourpuss, but maybe if other people had given him more gifts, he wouldn't be so unpleasant. So, because I don't want you to be a sourpuss, I'm going to give you, Craig,
some sour complete piss.
Yes, some sour piss. Drink it up. Yum, yum. No, I'm going to give you on vinyl the complete Snuffs catalog, including all of the live bootlegs as well, and the Quillaby solo stuff, which is, you know, a lot more pointed. And, you know, there's some spoken word poetry as well.
I appreciate it. So thanks. I'm just going to set it over here.
Cool. I can't wait for you to listen to all
that. Yeah. I'm just setting them underneath some of my old newspapers from the 80s. Just so I know where they're at, you know. I'll get to them when I get to them.
Of course.
I'm sure someone will appreciate it in this household. Look, Steve, I know the way to your heart is with a knife, but also with some food. So if you open your closet door, I made 4,000 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's falling out right now. Hope you like the grape jelly, because that's what Marge is making.
That's fine, yeah.
And also, you know, back in the day, we used to do t-shirts on this show. I'm bringing the shirt back, and I'm giving you a white shirt with a pink heart and a truck in the middle of it. So, because I think you deserve a truck guy shirt.
I want to be a truck guy. I like it.
Enjoy your sandwich and shirt.
Alrighty, enjoy your sad sack music.
It's great. Ooh, I can make this a frisbee.
Alrighty, Craig. So what worked for you in this episode? What made you laugh?
The truck commercial in the beginning. Again, The Simpsons, I think, starts off with just some of the best like comedy openings in any TV show of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole commercial parody of like those typical Ford F-150 or what, you know, Dodge truck car commercial parody of that was just so on spot and like perfect. Like no complaints there. I think that was probably one of my favorite scenes. So it's hard to say like the favorite scene of a Simpsons episode is the first scene because it usually is the best. But mm-hmm. I think here it is definitely great. It's funny because I think I like the poignant kind of message, like Lisa's story of like imaginary friends and like going through like a growth spurt, or like, I don't think it's mental illness. It's just her like trying to find herself in her voice. And it's very relatable, but just mm-hmm. Homer's B story, I think, is just so dumb that that's what really makes me laugh in this episode. And I think I'll just kind of surmise my thoughts on this episode. I think that's kind of how I feel about this episode. It's a fine episode. I think directing wise and writing wise, it's so well done and so relatable. And this is kind of the message I want from The Simpsons. Or like, this is kind of how I want to explore, because we all like identified as Lisa growing up because we were the nerd. We weren't like Bart. So seeing like Lisa kind of like in our own ways, like we kind of related to that we grew up this way with like angsty music or just finding these musicians, these singer songwriters that were our poets that we followed. You know, we would get patches on them and put them on our jackets, or even saying like, well, when we turn 18, we're going to get a tattoo of, you know, these people. Thankfully we didn't.
Right.
So you have this all like kind of realistic story that you could take that this script and give it to like a Blossom. Is that a popular show about kids these days? Blossom.
All the kids are talking about Blossom. Blossom. What okay, is Six up to?
Yeah. What is the show? iCarly. Even that's probably a dated reference.
Yeah. Young Sheldon.
I don't know, but then you take the B story of Homer and the truck thing, and that's where all the dumb comedy kind of comes in and what you kind of expect. Like, this is an interesting episode because in me, like watching the episode of The Sweetest of Pooh last week and then this one, which is a very more recent episode,
mm-hmm.
It's like you combined the weird, like dumb Schwartzwelderly type of jokes from The Sweetest of Pooh into this episode with Tim Long's writing of like, you get a best of both worlds in a way. Like, you get the dumb story of the dumb jokes with Homer and the truck, and then you get this like smart, poignant episode with Lisa. And so you get both. I kind of like that about this episode. I think when it originally came out, I'm just indifferent to it, but I'm glad that watching it a couple times and just like looking back and then talking to you, of course, that we see like the crafts and care, I think, in this episode, and that how it really spoke to me. So it's an episode I definitely would watch again. Again, not being a Smiths fan or Morrissey fan, I think just through Lisa's eyes in this episode was great. And the Homer dumb storyline, that how dumb it was, and even ending with him doing a dumb thing, but it was all like in his dream, just brought to this realistic episode that we got. So a very fun episode, well-directed. I don't know if it's one for the ages or old school Simpsons fans, you know, I get it. But also I appreciate this because it's something that we haven't really dealt with yet. I'm glad they did do this because, again, relatable to Lisa. So if I give this a ranking, the English rock band known as the Smiths, of course, recorded 74 songs in total, which included 70 originals and 4 covers. So if I gave this a ranking out of 74, I'd give this episode a 59.
Nice.
How about you, Steve?
Well, Craig, this is a very interesting episode because it does a really good job of capturing that kind of discovery of teen angst and how much like passion you have for certain like things that kind of speak to you in a certain way. And when you come upon those and they're like, oh my God, this is my thing. It's such a great feeling. It can cover your whole life. And I just really enjoy the way that Lisa found that. And, you know, as much as I'm not a fan of the Smiths, I think that it's a really good band for her to find, especially even now in today's modern age, because she would be one to go back to the 70s to find the music that she likes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Quillaby's portrayal of just somebody so hell-bent on disliking everything, like, it's such a vibe that you've known people like that where they just think it's cool to just poo-poo on everything. Usually it takes a couple hours. But just, you know, just disliking everything. So I think that's interesting. I also think the option of just making fun of Morrissey is a choice, and I like it. He's always been kind of, as the British would say, a prat, not Chris. But I just think that what he's become in the past few years and their ability to make fun of him is a lot of fun. And I think that Benedict Cumberbatch did a really good job because I was never thinking about him. I was never thinking, oh, that's Khan. I was just thinking about how...
horrible reference. Take that back. Star Trek Into Darkness is the worst Star Trek movie ever. Take it back.
Sorry.
Thank you.
But I just think that his performance captured it really well. I really like actually the songs that he and Brett McKenzie wrote because they're very catchy and they're, in my mind, almost better versions of Smith songs. So that's really dumb. Really well done.
Yeah, I want to give it up to Benedict. I forgot to bring him up, but like that's how great his performance was. Like I just felt he was just a cast member and not guest starring Benedict Cumberbatch.
Right. And I always love that.
Yeah. And he did all the singing and everything. It was great. Loved it.
Yeah, very good. And I think that Homer's plot is really dumb, but I think the juxtaposition between the two about Lisa defining her personality through the music she likes and Homer finding his identity as being a truck guy kind of parallels really well, because as we grow, we all try and find out who we are. And sometimes it takes, you know, things like music or a big truck to prove your manhood to kind of identify yourself. So I thought that was fun. So yeah, I think this was a good episode. I don't know if it's like top tier, but I think it's a solid episode. And I think it was a lot of fun. Also, the dynamic between Bart, Nelson, and Milhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And also Lisa's ability to tear down a brother on this deep emotional level, which is so painful. So that was really good. And also just the idea of Milhouse and Nelson hanging out, making fun of Bart. It's very funny to me. So I would say that Homer's truck is very similar to, like, say, a Ford F-150, which has 19 miles per gallon of gas. So out of 19, I'm going to give this a 14 out of 19.
All cromulent scores.
Indeed. But while we talk about this episode, we got to know what are we watching next week. And in order to do that, we're going to need that wheel of random. Let's give it a spin to see which season we're in. Alrighty, we have season 16. Alrighty, let's give it another spin to see which episode we are watching. Episode 7, season 16, episode 7. Alrighty, Craig, what do you think the title of this episode is?
Well, we're season 16, huh? Jeez, too caught up on season 16. So I can't do an educated guess, so I'm going to do an uneducated guess.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be called Captain McAllister, Agnes, and Their Boy Chalmers.
Wow.
I am literally looking at the only Simpsons action figures I have right now. That's the Sea Captain, Agnes, and Chalmers. So I can never use this one again.
That sounds like an interesting story, and I'm curious to what it is, but unfortunately, we'll never know. And that is also unfortunately not correct, because the title of the episode is entitled Mommy Beerist.
Okay, so here's what happens. What I think happens. I believe that Marge becomes the new Duff spokesperson.
Oh.
Yeah, so Duffman's like, I quit. And they need a new spokesperson. They want a new, like, a set of people to market to. You know, they don't need the bro type anymore, like Homer and stuff like that. They want to tackle the mom crowd. So they want to target beer towards mothers and women. So they hire Marge to become the new the spokesperson for Duff.
Huh.
And in the B story, Lisa and Milhouse pull pranks on Bart because Bart killed Honey Goo Goo.
Oh, wow.
With a shotgun. I mean with a slingshot. Slingshot.
Okay. Well, as interesting as all that is.
Is that the name of Melissa's dog, Honey Goo Goo, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's what happens.
I mean, it could happen, but what does happen in Mommy Beerist is when Marge discovers Homer has remortgaged the house to help Moe's bar, she takes over as landlady.
Wow.
Little does Homer know, Moe and Marge are a match made in pub heaven.
I remember this episode, so there you go.
Interesting. I do not, so I'm curious to see what it's all about.
Well, probably 22 minutes, Steve.
Yeah, it's about 22 minutes.
All right.
Looking forward to that. And as always, thank you folks for listening. Hope to hear from you next week. You know, you can always reach out to us on the socials at 138 Simpsons, and you can check us out on Instagram, on Facebook, and Twitter, and even on YouTube.
And you can email us at 138simpsons@gmail.com. Leave us a message. But if you don't want to type, you can leave us a voicemail. Just go to the podcatching app, scroll down through the show's notes, and leave a voicemail. Also, hey, leave us a review. Go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us 5 stars or the equivalent. But you don't have to leave a real review. No, we just want you to go ahead and let us know which band was your angsty teen years band.
Music. That's right. And hey, if we are your angsty band that you like, support your local band of podcasting dorks by going to our TeePublic, teepublic.com/user/annoyedgrintboy, and buy yourself a t-shirt or a mouse pad or a sticker.
And hey, thanks for listening. Tell a friend, tell an enemy. We want more listeners.
Alrighty, for this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And remember, I'm not sad, I'm happy.
And 5'8 is a nice height for a fella.
You're just jealous because you can't pull off hot pants.